Good morning, it's still morning. The panel was previously introduced, as you can all note, Judge Connolly is absent, he had a family matter. That means he will simply review the audio portion of your argument. We will then confer as a complete panel before making any decision. With that in mind, I will have our marshal call the next case for consideration.
Calling 824-0992, Virginia Rivas Castro respondent versus Lorraine P. Jansen, appellant.
Appellant counsel, when you're ready, go ahead and approach. 15 minutes for presentation of your case, and you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal reserved.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. May it please the court, my name is John Edison. I'm the attorney for appellants Lorraine Jansen and Independent School District 196. And as noted in the briefing, the case before you involves an underlying traffic collision that occurred between a school bus and a Chevy Tahoe on the morning of February 7th, 2017. And really the core issue that we're before the court this morning to talk about is the question of whether the driver, Lorraine Jansen, adjusted her driving appropriately to road conditions during inclement weather when there is no dispute or evidence, or excuse me, when there's no evidence that she exceeded the posted speed limit. And so based on that issue, the school district and Ms. Jansen asserted in the proceedings below that she should be entitled to official immunity in this proceeding based on the discretionary conduct that she exercised leading up to the collision.
Which and is that, a legal determination, and you agree that if we find that Ms. Jansen, in fact, was immune, then vicarious immunity would fall to the school district?
Yes, Your Honor, that's what we're arguing, and I think there's no dispute about that under the circumstances, so what we're really focusing
on. You've been on the first prong, and then you're kind of home free on the second.
That's how I read the district court's order. So as you probably, I'm sure you know from reviewing the materials, the district court denied our motion for summary judgment on official immunity but did not decide that issue. And ultimately the district court determined that there was a fact issue about primarily whether one particular video was incorporated into district policy and created a ministerial or bright line standard that defendant Jansen was required to follow at the time of the collision. We briefed a lot of things. The issue that I want to home in on for purposes of oral argument today is really the district court's decision to treat the question of whether Ms. Jansen's conduct was ministerial or not as a fact issue. Because if you read the district court's order on page 13 of the district court's memorandum, it basically says that it's being set for trial so the jury can determine whether the district and Jansen are entitled to immunity, and so the jury can determine whether her conduct was ministerial, and that's inappropriate under established case law based on our argument. We cited case after case in our briefing for the proposition that immunity is a legal question to be determined by the court. And one of the cases we cited is the Visayo versus Majeski case, which I think is very germane in this situation for a few reasons, and one of them is, in that case, the Court of Appeals remanded a matter back to the district court for a trial on the issue of whether a sheriff's deputy's conduct violated a statute and a sheriff's office policy. And the Supreme Court said that was inappropriate, that fact question didn't need to be resolved. And what should have been resolved by the Court of Appeals was the question of whether the deputy's conduct was ministerial or discretionary to begin with, and that's a legal question. And so we're arguing that that same standard should apply here. And of course, with the elements of official immunity, those are well established. We're looking at the conduct at issue, whether it's discretionary or ministerial, and then whether the public official engaged in a willful or malicious wrong. Now, there's no dispute about the third one. Everyone agrees that Ms. Jansen was not acting willfully or malicious under the circumstances, so we don't need to focus on that one. Now, with the question of whether she was acting in a discretionary or ministerial matter, that's where I think the district court really erred in two ways. First, in my view, the court focused on the wrong issue. And then second, if the court, you know, regardless of whether this video was incorporated into district policy or procedure, the court didn't address the weight of the training materials and manual materials that are part of the record. And that's important. So on this piece about the court focusing on the wrong issue, the court really focused on this one particular video, which we're calling the brakes and braking video that's been discussed in the briefing. And the court basically said there's a portion of this video that says makes reference to reducing speed by half or more when driving on packed snow or ice. And for that reason, there's arguably a ministerial standard and a jury needs to determine whether that's part of the policy or not. But the problem with that is nobody argued in the proceedings below that this one video set the standard for the district's bus drivers. Dr. Rivas Castro at the district court level made reference to a number of materials, including a statute that generally applied to drivers and requires all drivers to drive reasonably based on traffic conditions. And in the briefing before this court, I think that the position of the respondent is underscored because they argue also in the briefing before this court that there's a variety of materials that creates the standards that apply to Ms. Jansen, and it's not just this one video. Nobody's saying that. And so that singular focus that the district court had is an error of law. And then another thing that is important on in terms of articulating what sets the standard of Ms. Jansen's conduct is just kind of the burdens that apply to the parties in a case like this one. So the appellants, the district, and Ms. Jansen, we acknowledge that we have the burden of establishing that immunity applies. There's case law that talks about that. We've cited it in our briefs. But the respondent also has an obligation that's discussed in this court's Gerber decision and the unpublished decision of Stein versus City of Llano Lakes. And those two cases stand for the proposition that when immunity is asserted, the burden, the plaintiff has a burden of articulating the specific conduct that's at issue. In Stein, the Court of Appeals talked about how that's a burden, when you're talking about a ministerial duty, that's a burden of identification and definition. And so they have to show that the ministerial duty is identified and then that it's adequately defined in order to be ministerial. And that's where there's a problem here. Because when we look at the materials that are part of the record, there's a variety of standards that are referenced. And when we try to synthesize all of that, there's no standard that emerges that would meet the legal definition of a ministerial standard. And so on that point, I just kind of want to walk through the materials that are part of the record. So one of the things we cited is the Minnesota School Bus Driver's Handbook. This is part of the Minnesota CDL manual. And this particular provision that I'm referring to is part of our addendum on page 25. And that handbook talks about speed limits for bus drivers. And really all it says that's relevant here is that they need to obey the posted speed limit and drive reasonably based on road conditions. So that's it. So then there's also a model manual called the AAMVA model manual that's also part of the Minnesota Commercial Driver's License manual. And in that manual also has standards that talk about driving in various road conditions, and they're different. In one area, that manual actually says that drivers are supposed to reduce speed to a crawl, and if possible, stop driving altogether if a road is icy. That's on page 44 of the addendum. In another section, it is much more vague and generalized about driving in winter weather or icy conditions. It says that drivers should drive smooth and slow in slippery conditions. And then that's on page 47 of the addendum. And then there's another provision on that same page that talks about driving in conditions where it's right around freezing and ice begins to melt. And it basically just says slow down more. So then those are two of the materials. There's a third material that the parties have cited, third document the parties have cited, which is called the Intro to Driving a School Bus for Licensed District 196 Drivers. And This is also in the addendum, page 51. It has some language that talks about speed limits. And in some cases, it's very specific. Like, it'll say 5 miles per hour or 10 miles per hour in some areas. But then when we're talking about driving on the open road, it says that drivers are expected to drive at posted speed limits slash conditions, and that's it. And then finally, we have the video that was the crux of the district court's decision, which is the brakes and braking video. And that one said, we quoted a paragraph from it.
This is where I need you to explain to me the district court's rationale saying that there is a question about the braking procedure. I read through your documents, I read through the policies, all of the information that has to do with giving the bus driver guidance. And then there's this question arises in the district court order questioning the braking.
Yep.
I'll be frank, I don't understand what the question is.
Your Honor, I don't...
Pump the brakes, slam on the brake. That's what I didn't understand.
And Your Honor, I don't understand the rationale for that either. And I think that's part of the problem with the district court's order, where the district court loosely makes reference to all these materials, but it doesn't do the work of identifying where there's a ministerial standard that emerges. The argument that was made by the plaintiff below is basically that she didn't slow down enough when the road was icy. And that's where, so as we look at this from the district side, there's no argument that she was exceeded the posted speed limit, that there's no evidence that shows that. So then the question is, should she have slowed down, and if so, how much? And that's where we're saying there is no definitive standard that would govern what she's supposed to do under those circumstances. And the same thing with braking. The manual material talks about braking distances and whether you've got hydraulic brakes or anti-lock brakes on your bus and the differences between those two. And that's just really not discussed in the order. And Dr. Rivas-Castro didn't argue below that she should have braked her bus in a particular way in order to avoid this collision.
I wanted to ask one thing. So if we were to agree with you that, in fact, the question of whether or not the conduct was ministerial or discretionary is a legal question, and we determine that, again, agreeing with you that it is discretionary, then we move on to whether or not the conduct was willful or malicious, correct?
That is part of the analysis, yes.
So in your brief, you say that we have to decide that in appellant's favor as a matter of law, and I assume that means that you're asking for outright reversal then, and not for us to remand to the district court to consider the question of whether the behavior was willful or malicious.
Correct, because the way that willful or malicious is defined, and we talked about that in the briefing, and nobody has argued.
In that allegation, it's not in the complaint, is it? It's not in the allegation?
Correct, yeah, no one's arguing that she did act in a willful or malicious way. That's why we're saying.
I guess that'll be a question for a respondent, but that's the way I read the pleadings.
That's how I read it, too, and I believe they acknowledge that in the briefing. And so, yes, Your Honor, we're arguing that this case should, the summary judgment decision should just be reversed such that summary judgment is granted in favor of the defendants.
Then the case goes on, we can remand it for whatever might still be there.
Well, that would, in my view, that would just resolve the case.
I don't know if there's other tangential things that we're not aware of.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much what we're down to at this point. And then I just, in the remaining time I have in my principal argument, I just want to talk about this notion about policy creating a ministerial duty, because there's some case law that I think is helpful to support the appellant's arguments here. And the first is the Anderson versus Anoka-Hennepin School District case, which that one is the case where the Supreme Court announced that a ministerial duty does not have to come from a statute or a law. And it acknowledged that a ministerial duty could come from a policy or a protocol that's written or unwritten if it's something that employees are expected to follow. And that's kind of the key language in my view, is whether employees are expected to follow it or not. And so here with this video, when, you know, when we go back to the video, if that's the standard we look at, which is the legal standard, and then go back to the record and look at what the record shows, there's literally no witness who has testified that the standard in this video is the standard that bus drivers are expected to follow. The district's witnesses stated in their deposition testimony and in a declaration that the district expects its drivers to use their professional judgment and discretion based on the road conditions they encounter in real time to adjust their driving. And that's the standard that the district imposes. And so then ultimately, the respondent has some language in the brief that I think is a synthesis of the rule, that they're saying the standard should be that she had an obligation to reduce speed and adjust driving according to road conditions. And we address that in our briefing based on the Visayo decision. That has to be discretionary. And with that, I'll save the remainder of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Adriel Villarreal, and I represent Virginia Rivas Castro in this case. Your Honor, I'd like to...
Judge Wheelock asked a good question. Do we need to address it? Did you make any allegations as far as willful, malicious, anything of that nature by the bus driver's actions?
No, Your Honor. The nature of the underlying... behavior that we believe brings us here today is pure negligence, that there was a duty, that that was breached, and that somebody was injured. We agree that there was nothing willful or wanton or like that at play, and I think that's what the record bears out. I think it's important to back up a little bit before I get into the ministerial. One of the things and the considerations that I would have the court consider is what the district did from when the accident actually happened. And I think it plays in as to whether this is ministerial or whether it's discretionary. As the record states, after this particular accident, the district, with control of the scene and control of the evidence, relied on Jansen, Ms. Jansen, to determine that this was a preventable accident. I think that's germane for the consideration because on one hand, the district is saying, we are going to take your pay, Ms. Jansen, for 2 days. We're going to suspend you, and we're going to make you get training on the very manuals that we're talking about are apparently not mandates by the district. I think that's an important consideration for the court to consider when the district is now saying, well, we're immune, even though we penalized one of our bus drivers.
This. Why wouldn't we interpret that as trying to facilitate and develop that bus driver's understanding of how to behave in a discretionary manner?
It very well could be, Your Honor. It could also be the district's response in trying to figure out how they're going to be immune anytime one of their bus drivers is involved in an accident that's caused by them. This morning, can you imagine how many children, how many kids got on a yellow bus to go to school? The result of what is being asked here does not provide any kind of remedy to somebody who's either injured by the bus driver. Perhaps there would have been children in the bus that were injured that day. They would have no remedy if ultimately the decision is that this was a discretionary act. I agree with counsel that when we look at and we boil this down, if you look at the actual I believe that the court can find under a de novo review that immunity applies or doesn't apply. I know the district court kind of went back and forth. I also believe that this court could say, you know what, maybe that video is germane. Maybe that is something that needs to be looked at. I also believe that this court could decide that a jury might need to be the ones under Thompson to decide whether she was speeding or not. What I can inform the court is, for whatever reason, Ms. Jansen that day was unable to stop her large bus, and her vehicle hit my client's Tahoe. Those are the facts. Something happened there. She was unable to do so. So when we look at the specific conduct at issue, I think we generally agree. I think the district would have us hone in on the specific conduct being, how do you apply the brakes when there's a little bit of ice? I think that that's a reasonable way of looking at it. I think the district court agreed to. I think it's also reasonable to look at it and say, is it just that particular conduct? I mean, suppose she makes it through Archer Trail without any accident and gets on roads that are dry and is unable to stop and hit somebody. Do we now have a different standard? Do we have different way that she's applied to, allowed to drive that van, or excuse me, her school bus? When we look at the information that the district required, go ahead.
This is where I'm at on this.
Yep,
so
yep.
Official immunity is a legal question.
Correct.
So if you're asserting anywhere that the bus driver was acting inappropriately, then wouldn't that have been that third element that Judge Wheelock brought up, that she was, I don't know, you know, on her phone and didn't hit the brakes in time, and you haven't alleged that. So how does this get to be a jury question?
We have alleged it was negligent. This is not the type of thing that happens, for our understanding, unless somebody didn't adhere to some sort of a standard.
But in order to get to the negligence question, we first have, from a legal standpoint, have to decide if the immunity applies. So we'd have to look through at those factors.
I agree with that. I understand that. And I guess I'm...
And then I was hung up on why didn't anybody pay any attention to the fact that there was a no parking zone and your client was parked there. I mean, isn't that a part of your negligence claim, too?
It's not. It's not. I mean, it's been discussed in the case.
I'm not talking about your client's behavior. I'm talking about a bus driver that's approaching an area that has a no parking zone.
Correct. That wasn't a germane part of the case, Your Honor, moving forward. But I agree that with the court that the decision whether this is ministerial or whether this is discretionary is something that this court, I mean, I agree with counsel. I mean, it could decide that and it could end the case one way or the other. My plea on behalf of my client to the court is, why does the district then have these materials? Counsel pretty articulately stated the four different places where this information flows from. They bring on a driver like Ms. Jansen, they put her through training, they make her go through this material. They make her watch, I think it's 15 to 20 videos and check the box. They make her go through all these materials. Certainly if she fails on some of those things, they retrain her, they help her. There's language there that's very specific. In this one video at issue, and this is cited in the materials, there's a discussion about, you know, reducing speed by half. He uses the word must. Look, I agree with Mr. Edison that when you look at some of those training materials, they're not all completely concise and direct. The burden that I have is to be able to establish to you that the ministerial duty that I believe it is sufficiently narrowed. And I think what it is, her duty, her obligation, is to slow that bus down in any condition, dry or snowy, in a way where that impact doesn't occur. That's the act. That's her responsibility on any given morning when she's going out and doing these things. I don't think it's an issue of that we're arguing like some of the case law that cited that the policy is wrong. But if I'm a school district, why would I ever have any policy that is any more stringent? If you're going to get out on immunity every time one of your bus drivers has a collision and say, there's no remedy to this injured party, that perhaps the district is doing it correctly.
I guess I'm still trying to figure out how it cannot be discretionary, right? How we move from discretionary to ministerial under your view of the case. And I agree with you that there are training materials that are specific to how to operate that narrow what behavior is allowed, right? The example that Judge Werke gave about being on the cell phone, for example, would be outside the scope of that. But, you know, given the fact that we live in the environment that we do and the roads are sometimes snow-covered and ice-covered, how can it be that there is no discretion in terms of what you do in those situations? And I'm in particular, I'm thinking of our line of cases that have to do with snow plows and you know, whether or not the decision that a snowplow driver makes is discretionary or ministerial in those conditions.
Thank you. We know in one of the snowplow cases, when a snowplow decides to back up, immunity will not be applied. Immunity is not afforded to them in that situation. Here, when we look at the whole, and that's the problem, after spending a lot of time in these immunity cases, what we do notice, there is a theme with the courts, is that most of the time, most of these cases, or a lot of them, they stem from like emergency circumstances. They stem from something, a police officer going through, or snowplow backing up, turning siren lights on or off. This is a little bit different, and I think it does perhaps require a different way of looking at it. This is Ms. Jansen every day. What's ministerial about it? You got to pump the brakes. There's case law that we cited about no immunity applying when you got to bulldoze or blow up the house next door. They said, yeah, there's some discretionary aspects. Maybe we decide to use this tool or that tool, but ultimately the decision of making sure that this house gets taken down is ministerial. When we look at those materials, which I think are germane, the compilation of all of those, it talks about speed, reduce speed by half, slow down, okay? Those types of things, those I believe can rise to the level of a mandate. She had no choice, in my opinion, respectfully, to slow down. That was not discretionary that day. Once she realized that there was snow and ice on those roads, she had no discretion to decide to go slower than the traffic. There's no discretion there. Just like she would not have had any discretion to go above the speed limit that day or to put on her seatbelt that day.
Is there discretion in how much she slows down, whether it's by half or by more than half, by 75%, by 90%?
I think that she would have had discretion on how much she applied to do that. The discretion is that she's going to brake or not, but she didn't have a choice to brake. That's required. The other piece that I wanted to ask is, and it's more rhetorically for me as I think about it to help try to explain the argument, is would we be here had she been cited? In the briefs and the materials, they talk about she wasn't speeding, she wasn't distracted, no citation was given to her. So is the inverse true? Had she been cited, would the district have an immunity argument? It seems untenable to me for that. It's all about the ministerial duties. Where do they come from? Are they narrowly tailored? I believe, as the lower court looked at and found some of them, that those can be taken from the underlying documents, materials. Even the admissions by the two employees for the district acknowledge that these materials are meaningful. Why else would they exist? Why are they part of the record? Why are they to be trained? As I'm watching my time and getting to the end here, I think it's important that I believe there's sufficient evidence in the record for the court to make a decision, obviously one way or the other, back and forth. It's our contention that we have met our burden by being able to show that that burden on the ministerial duty is sufficiently narrowed to be able to defeat immunity. I think there's a policy, as counsel talked a little bit about it, policy argument here. Had this been a private school bus company and about half the school districts have their own, there would be a remedy for a client like mine. District School 196, they're part of the school district, they're part of that, and when somebody is injured, there is no remedy in law. I'm not so sure that's what the immunity, official immunity, and therefore the applicable vicarious liability statutes were intended or created for. This was not an emergency situation. This was a day-to-day driving. Do we set a precedent moving forward that anytime a bus driver has an accident, and this is what's key in my opinion, and is not cited by law enforcement for whatever reason, the district is now, a district or any district, in my opinion, would have carte blanche to say immunity applies. They had discretion to blow through or to blow through a stop sign, to not stop in time, to not yield. That would be the reality.
That's a little bit different. That would be willful or malicious. If you're going to blow through a stop sign, you see the stop sign, you just go.
But Your Honor, if they were not cited, a district would come in and say, well, they tried to apply their brakes, they used their discretion, they just couldn't get stopped in time. I don't think that would prevent the arguments that District 196 is making today. It is a little bit more elaborate, but the distinction is there. If there's no citation, this district is saying there's no liability because we tried to stop, we couldn't. I would ask that the court would consider those policy reasons based upon what are the facts here. This is narrowly tailored stuff. These are things she didn't have, Ms. Jansen didn't have a choice. She had to stop that bus safely. How she did it, I agree with Your Honor. She could have applied with her right foot, a little harder, a little softer, whatever it be, but there was no discretion. That bus needed to be stopped, whether on a cold, icy day or whether on a dry, sunny day. That did not happen. Therefore, I would ask the court to make a decision based upon the information that has been submitted. I know I've been wishy-washy with what the trial court did. It was a little bit of a different decision that the court made, but I think this court can make, could send it back on those fact issues or certainly make a determination whether immunity applies or does not. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Mr. Edson, you get the last word.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Your Honors, I want to address a couple of things on rebuttal. The first is I want to talk a little bit about the district's response to this collision. And in my view, the fact that the district issued a suspension and required some remedial training is completely irrelevant to the immunity question before this court. I in my practice advising school districts, I regularly talk to districts about taking action to address an employee who's exercising poor judgment and discretion. And just because a district responds to that and tries to address it does not make that conduct ministerial. We still have to focus on, is this ministerial conduct or not? And discretionary conduct, although it would trigger immunity, is still something that could be addressed through disciplinary action. Another thing I want to address is this notion that we're arguing for complete immunity for district bus drivers. That is absolutely not the argument I'm making before this court. And I agree with the discussion previously where Judge Wheelock, you pointed out, well, both of you did, talked about a situation where someone's on a cell phone and causes a crash. I mean, that's unlawful, and there's a statute law that addresses that. If someone violates that and causes a collision, they can't argue that they were engaged in discretionary function at that time. The same thing is true if someone blows through a stop sign and hits someone. That there's a ministerial obligation to stop at a stop sign or a red light. If someone does not do that and causes a collision, then the immunity argument likely would not apply under those circumstances. Same thing if someone exceeds the posted speed limit. I mean, it's clear from the record and the law that the expectation is that bus drivers follow the posted speed limit. If Ms. Jansen,
information here, though, about her speed.
Correct. And so, I mean, for example, I think the speed limit on this road was 50 miles an hour. If Ms. Jansen was flying down it at 70 and hit someone, that would be a problem. That didn't happen. And as far as the speed generally goes, what we heard with the respondents' arguments was this notion that she had to stop. That was her responsibility. When you look at the record and the testimony from the witnesses and the record, there's literally not a single witness who can say exactly how fast she was going. We know that there's no evidence that she exceeded the posted speed limit. Ms. Jansen testified that she believed she was traveling at an appropriate rate of speed and responsibly under the circumstances, particularly because she didn't have issues with her bus earlier that day. Dr. Rivas Castro admitted in her deposition testimony that she didn't really see the bus coming until it was approaching her vehicle and beginning to decelerate. Her son was in her Tahoe, and he said the same thing. Her daughter was in the Tahoe, and she said she didn't even see the bus coming before the collision occurred. Another thing I want to address is the reference to the Charis decision, which is, we talked about the snowplow line of cases. This is the one where immunity didn't apply to a snowplow operator who backed up to clear room for a school bus. I don't think that case applies. I think this situation is similar to the other cases where immunity has applied to snowplow drivers. In Charis, the driver in that situation was not actively plowing snow at the time that the conduct occurred, And it really was just the simple act of backing up to try to make room for another vehicle to pass. Here, there's no dispute that Ms. Jansen was performing her morning bus routes. She was actively engaged in the performance in transporting students at the time this occurred. She was on her third route that morning, and she was in the process of arriving at her first stop, so it's distinguishable for that reason. Another thing I want to talk about is just this argument that we heard today, and it was referenced in the district court's order too, the suggestion that there has to be an emergency for some of the cases we've cited to apply. That there's never been a standard in Minnesota law that emergency circumstances have to be present for immunity. The Supreme Court specifically said that in the 1996 Watson versus Met Council case. And so here, I think, and we address this in the briefing, that the Visayo case is very applicable because we talk about whether a standard such as slow down is necessary for safety is discretionary or ministerial, and the court said there that that's discretionary. And that the fact that that case involved law enforcement, I don't think changes the analysis. And with that, I'll conclude my arguments. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you to both counsel. The briefs were very well done. The argument today helps us interpret what we have read in the case file. The matter is submitted, and a decision will be issued in a statutory time frame. Thank you again for coming today.
Thank you.
With that said, this court is in adjournment.
All rise.